Welcome to Hillhurst United Church, the podcast. We're really glad you're here. Whoever you are, wherever you're at, join us on the journey.
Okay, it's time for some truth and storytelling. I'm a California girl. Worse than that, I'm a Valley girl. Yeah. But I was not in the part of the Valley girl that developed, I wasn't the part of the Valley that developed that language, so even though I can locate myself there, there's still a distance. Yes. So I was born and raised in and around Burbank in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, and I was so proud to live in California, you know, two streets from the foothills where we would go in the mountains and play, and my mom would just say, be back in time for dinner, and off we would go. A 40-minute drive from the beach. Just a beautiful place, right? 2 hours to the snow to ski. Like, it really was paradise, right? And the nickname of California is the Golden State, and of course it was given that name because gold was discovered there in 1849, so if you're wondering why that San Francisco football team is named the 49ers, they're named after the gold rush, and the state takes its name from the gold rush. But people who live in California know that the Golden State is much more than some precious metal. Because my favorite part of the state is the late summer months when the hills and mountains all through the state dry and the grass turns a golden color and waves in the wind. And those desert wildflowers, the California poppies, pop up and bloom and cover the hillsides with a golden orange. And even the state fish is gold. I went scuba diving one time, and you know, I was taught about the Garibaldi. Like you could hunt any other fish, but not the state fish, this goldfish about this big. And those things know they're protected. They come right up to you, and they go, and they make this noise that's like, it's crazy. Yeah, there's a lot of goodness in my growing up years, right? And I was born into the church. I was actually baptized on All Saints Sunday. What a marvelous gift that my parents gave to me, probably without even knowing, right? I went to Catholic school all the way through university, studied on the campus where Mission Santa Clara is in my university years. In my high school years, I was 1 mile from the San Fernando Mission. I lived less than 5 miles from there, and we used to go to Mass there every now and again. And there were peacocks that roamed that place, and they would open the doors to the church, and the peacocks would come into the sanctuary. And it was horrible during mating season. Oh, the sounds they made. Oh, but we used to go worship there, and we would take a picnic, and we would picnic on the grounds of the San Fernando Mission. And I was raised to believe that Father Junipero Serra was a hero, who with Balboa discovered California and went up and down the coast establishing a chain of missions to help the Indians. And it was only after I moved here, in fact, just about 5 years ago, that I heard the word Tongva. Tongva. Tongva is the name of the people that lived in that place for 4,000 years before I was ever thought of. And what happened in California was much worse than what happened here, by my estimation at least, because the Tongva people were completely dispossessed. They were enslaved, and it's their labor actually that built the City of Angels, that we have the nerve to call it that. They built Los Angeles. I'd never heard of them. And 2 years ago, the state of California granted them their first piece of land in 200 years. It was in Altadena, which was where I lived. That tract of land, 200 yards from my home. Isn't that how it goes for us? Isn't that how it's going for us? I had no idea. None. And I tell this parable so that you could see yourself in it without me accusing you of anything, right? We didn't know. We didn't do that work. But what we've inherited is more than a mess. What we've inherited is a legacy of dispossession and violence. And just so you know, the plan for all of North America was to eradicate the people. It was to take the land completely. That was the plan. The reason we have the trouble we have now is that we didn't kill them all. We didn't assimilate them all. The plan to take children and turn them into good citizens didn't really work. You know, and how do you kill a people? Well, devalue their women, take their children, emasculate them, give them alcohol. It's just a matter of time. Today, we commemorate that colonization wasn't good for everyone. Today, we commemorate that colonization wasn't good for anyone. Because as we wake up to the facts of our own history, they're accompanied by guilt and shame, by anger, by defensiveness, by a distancing. Never in my life was I afforded the chance to have a relationship with an indigenous person. I didn't even know there were any in California. Yeah, we had residential schools there too. And you might notice this morning we don't have indigenous people leading our worship. We don't have them speaking in this place. That actually was intentional. Because I asked one of my indigenous friends, Wapiski Misconnect, when I became aware of what was happening in Canada and when I became aware of, I don't know what the number is now, 2,400 missing and murdered women or more across Canada, children taken from their homes. I said to her, how do you keep from crying all the time? How do you keep from, how do you survive the grief? What do you do? You know what she said to me? I compartmentalize it. I schedule time to grieve, and then when the time's up, I stop. Because if I grieve the way that is warranted, I will never stop crying. Do you know we have statistics and facts to support the loss of missing and murdered Indigenous women? That whenever we've established a man camp for the extraction of resources, the Indigenous women in the area go missing. Did you know that? That's horrifying. That's horrifying. And if we dwell too long in these facts, what happens to us? We become paralyzed. We become angry. We become disconnected. We learn to separate our emotions from what we have to do. But the work ahead of us is about reclaiming our humanity. It's about returning to ourselves what colonizers lost hundreds of years ago when they began all of this. And it's about having the strength to say, we didn't do that, but we're going to do something about that. And then the question is, what? Because I'll tell you, I don't know. Except that it's amazing that our Indigenous people want anything to do with us at all. So right now, I'd like to pause and allow you to lift the name of an Indigenous person you know who leads this conversation on top of their grief and their anger. Like, who's doing the work? Who do you know? It's amazing that we have such companions on this road. And we didn't ask them here today because they grieve all the time. There comes a time when we actually have to do our work, when we have to raise our own awareness, when we have to tell our own story grounded in our own truth and the truth we didn't know that's being uncovered. So another parable. This comes to us from the ancient scriptures. Just so you know, you're not alone. We're not alone. This is not the first time this has happened in human history. This story comes from Acts chapter 9. Now Saul, he was breathing threats and murder against the people of Jesus' way. And so he went to the high priest and asked for the names of people, the followers of the way, who were in Damascus, so that he might go to Damascus and bind them and bring them back to Jerusalem. Now, on his way to Damascus, a bright light shone on him, and he fell to the ground. And he heard a voice, and the voice said to him, "Saul, Saul, why are you doing this to me?" And Saul said, "Who are you?" And the voice replied, "I am Jesus, the one that you're persecuting." But so you know that I have power to change things, I ask you to get up and go into Damascus, and in Damascus, you're going to be told what to do. Now, the people that were with him, they were really freaked out because they heard a voice, but they didn't see anyone. And so when Saul got up, although his eyes were open, he couldn't see anything. He was blind. And so his friends took him by the hand and led him into Damascus. And in Damascus, he remained, and he didn't eat or drink anything for 3 days. Now, meanwhile, there was a follower of the way, a companion of Jesus in Damascus, and his name was Ananias. And Jesus came to him in a vision and said to him, "Ananias, Ananias." And Ananias immediately said, "What, Lord? What is it?" Jesus said to him, "I want you to go to the street called Straight, to the house of Judas, and in that house you're going to find a man, and his name is Saul, and he's waiting for you. He's seen in a vision that a man named Ananias comes and lays his hands on him, and he's healed." Here I'm going to take a lot of liberty with the scripture. Ananias said, "Are you out of your mind? I know this guy. And he's the one that's rounding us up, and he's going to take us back to Jerusalem for some weird kangaroo trial. Do you think I'm crazy? I'm not going to go do that." Jesus said, "He's expecting you. It'll be fine." So Ananias went, and he went to the place where Jesus told him, and he found Saul, just as Jesus said, and he went to Saul, and he placed his hands on him, and then immediately something like scales fell away from Saul's eyes, and he regained his sight. Isn't that what's happening now? Aren't the scales falling away from our eyes? What really freaks me out about this story is that the scales fall from Saul's eyes, and who does he see right in front of him? The very one he's trying to persecute. That very one with whom he's got trouble, in him is Saul's salvation. And who orchestrated that? God. God who knows way more than we do. So I say to you, people of God, let's do our work. Let's listen. Let's build bridges and friendships. The people that are willing to talk to us on top of all this mess, they want a new Canada too. You know what happened to Saul when he regained his sight? When he saw Ananias? Part of his humanity was recovered. Can you imagine the gift of not having to live with anger and hatred and persecute? "I want to persecute you guys." That fell away too. We carry around judgments and perceptions that we don't even know about. But encounter with another remove scales from our eyes and we see a human being. I will tell you that being a clergy person is the worst job in the world. It is harder than any other profession that exists. Clergy people stand at the crossroads of all the divisions of politics and policy and opinion and what kind of renovation should we do and, you know, all of that. Right? So I'm kind of glad John's not here because I can lift him up and say, what a treasure we have in this minister. Oh my gosh. Is he great at everything? Nope. But he's a mad genius who loves people. And I'll also tell you that being a minister is the most glorious job there is. Ministers live in a fishbowl and we get away with exactly this much. Would that every human being had that. That you're forced to do your work. That you're forced to find the people that need to lay their hands on you so the scales can fall away so that we can actually be available for people. That's the call of God. So I hadn't heard anything about the Tongva people before I moved to Calgary, and I said not till 5 years ago. I worked for the city of Los Angeles for 10 years, never heard a word. But last night I went looking. Oh, I wonder if Los Angeles has a land acknowledgement now. Want to hear it? Totally amazing. It's going to inform what I do with my land acknowledgement. The County of Los Angeles recognizes that we occupy land originally and still inhabited and cared for by the Tongva people. And then they name five other peoples I've never heard of. Tataviam, Serrano, Kitsa, and Kumash. Oh, that was four, excuse me. We honor and pay respect to their elders and their descendants, past, present, and emerging, as they continue their stewardship of these lands and waters. We acknowledge that settler colonization resulted in land seizure, disease, subjugation, slavery, relocation, broken promises, genocide, and multi-generational trauma. This acknowledgement demonstrates our responsibility and our commitment to truth, healing, and reconciliation, and to elevating the stories, culture, and community of the original inhabitants of Los Angeles County. We are grateful to have the opportunity to live and work on these ancestral lands. We are dedicated to growing and sustaining relationships with Native peoples and local tribal governments. And then they list all the tribal governments. Isn't that great? Isn't that what we're dedicated to? Oh my, I want to put it on my house. It took a long time for us to get into this mess, for humanity to come to this point, didn't it? I don't know when the first boat landed. 1600s, I think. Or 425 years in, or 475 years in, something like that. Guess how long it's going to take us to get out? 475 years. People of God, we have a God who cares. We have a God of life. We have a God of love. We have a God who, you know, when Jesus spread his arms on the cross, he was saying, I am not going to fight. Violence is not in my handbook. You do your worst because I'm here to stay. I'm still here. And we might say it like this. Do your worst to love. You can't kill it. It might seem like it goes to the grave, but 3 days later, it comes out 500 times bigger than it was. We have a God of love who will companion us, who will teach us, who will show us. We might not know what to do, but we know we're going to do something. We're going to start by loving the people around us. We're going to latch into that God of love, that God of life, who will not leave us nor abandon us. Ananias laid his hands on Saul, and the scales fell away, and God took Saul on a mission. He spent 3 years in the wilderness trying to figure out what had just happened to him. Some awareness had been raised, and he took time to digest that. And we know him as St. Paul. He went around planting churches and apologizing to people. He died in a prison. God's not finished with us. We are beloved and cherished, and we are the catalyst of all that God wants to do that's good in this place. To recover our humanity, to build relationships, and to walk out those doors singing a song of praise to the God who can right this mess. Might we have the nerve to say, do your worst, because I'm going to respond with love. People of God, today's a challenging day. And it's a day that from the pulpit you hear the word, go do your homework. Find out where you were from. Find out who lived there. Find out what's going on now. Remember somebody's name. Renounce violence. What does it mean to take up your cross? I think it means you're willing to have somebody lay their hands on you. Somebody you might not like. Somebody you might not know. So that scales might fall away and real life might begin. Thanks be to God.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hillhurst United Church, the podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode and are thinking about someone who might enjoy it too, we invite you to send it their way and help the podcast grow. We're really glad you're here, and we'd love to know what you thought about today's sermon. Leave us a review in iTunes or send us an email at communications@hillhurstunited.com. We'd love to hear from you.